Space. The final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Their ongoing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. Found it. Trust me, I'm a Jedi.com. This is your host, Mark, and hanging with me, the dynamic duo of...
Ace, the electric monkey.
Frank T. Biscuit.
So, we have Ace in the house today. I didn't even know that we had a new electric monkey.
I was hoping Gary would be here with me, if you get that...
You just totally just made five people tune out of us. Thanks, man. Anyway, so how's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's a little rainy outside, but, you know, it was also rainy and sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah. And
right.
And there went another five.
Killing us today, monkey. Killing us. So we're here today for another episode of the show. As I just said, now I'm repeating myself, so you've got me all off track now.
I'm throwing people off today. It's what I do.
So we got some things to discuss, things going on in the world. Of course, the big news this week was the passing of Leonard Nimoy, which we'll talk about in a little while on the show. And for 2015, we do a segment or a articles on the website where very popular articles, the Retroplex Cinema. And we're going to focus on action films this year on Retroplex Cinema. So we're going to be talking to some of our favorite action films of all time here in a little bit. But we're going to start the show with a big fan film that tore up the internet this past week. And that is the Power Rangers fan film. It's directed by a fellow Houstonian, actually, Joseph Kahn, who I met years ago at a comic shop here. And it was before he started making it big. He's mostly known for doing... music videos, and he's done a couple of feature films. So this week he had been tweeting that he was releasing a tampon commercial. It's kind of funny because he's done some commercials too. And it turned out, when we woke up, I think it was Tuesday morning, this Power Rangers fan film hit the internet. And it's very adult, very violent.
Very adult.
Very adult language.
Dark,
gritty has been used to describe it. There's nudity in it, drug use. And... my first reaction is I saw it come across the internet, hadn't watched it yet, and Frank actually texted us guys saying, "Hey, man, have y'all seen it yet?" I was like, "I hadn't had a chance to sit down and watch it yet." So I sat down and watched it, and I'm like, it's pretty cool. I cringe at calling it a fan film, considering these guys, the producer of it, and Joseph Kahn have more money than any fans could ever have to make something like this.
That's true. So, well, are they fans?
They're fans, but they're also Hollywood. So it's a fan film, but it's also a high production fan film. And I know Frank really dug it. His first reaction was like, "Oh, that was cool. I watched Power Rangers all the time." And while...
no, I said I would have watched Power Rangers all the time.
I didn't hate it. I have a lot of problems with it. And I will tell you what those are in a second. I want to get y'all's thoughts on it real quick. Whoever wants to start, Frank, Matt.
Well, I'll let Matt go first because he grew up.
Give me your initial reaction to it first.
Well, I did grow up with Power Rangers. I got to see the originals, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and it was, you know, really cool growing up with that. And of course, it's become, you know, something big, obviously, if we're making, you know, movies like this. And I thought, you know, for my age, you know, seeing something that pertains to the movies that, you know, we as adults see all the time, something darker, something a little bit more violent, but, you know, with the Power Rangers, it was awesome. You know, the Pink Ranger even went on and tweeted that she loved the Pink Ranger and that she wishes that's the Pink Ranger that she could have been, because she was just bad A in the short film. But I also kind of agree with Jason David Frank, the original Green Ranger, Went and said that, you know, some, you know, they're tied to, you know, children's shows, you know, kind of. So you have to, you might need to water down that violence and NFSW kind of stuff in that film. But overall, you know, as far as, you know, me, I think it was well written. You don't get lost in the film. And there's a twist at the end. There's an awesome twist at the end. So that's my opinion.
Yeah. I would have enjoyed the Power Rangers, to be honest with you, more back in the day if it was more like this. You know, certain things could have been left out. The overall high level of violence for kids and all that, I agree with. But now as an adult, that doesn't bother me, so I can understand why, you know, they would not want, you know, kids seeing that. I totally agree. I wouldn't, if I had children, I wouldn't want them to see that much violence at an early age. But now, as an adult, I enjoyed it. You know, if Power Rangers were like that, I would have watched it because I would think, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, so I would have fallen more in the range of enjoying that kind of action. Mm-hmm. You know, the Power Rangers were a little bit more adult compared to, like you said, it came on Saturday mornings. It was for kids, you know.
It was Saturday morning cartoons back in the day.
I mean, a lot, you know, I took Taekwondo. You're obviously a black belt in Taekwondo. The kids that were in my Taekwondo class joined Taekwondo because they wanted to be real-life Power Rangers.
It's morphin' time.
I want to retract a little bit on y'all's statements. And here's my thing. Okay, what you say you would have enjoyed it more if it had been dark and gritty like that. But why does it have to be like that? Okay? And I kind of agree with some of the things Jason David Frank said, too, because not everything needs to be Nolanized or Tim Burtonized. It doesn't have to be dark and gritty. Mm-hmm. Why can't you do the Power Rangers a little more adult without the cocaine, the nudity, the violence? The language is ridiculous in it. I mean, come on.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't mind watching Pulp Fiction as much as the next guy, but there's no reason for that, even in a 12-minute short film. With that many F-bombs in it. It's like, it's just pointless. Mm-hmm. And that was my first thought when I watched it. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. But then I sat back and I'm like, this is pointless too. There's no point to it at all. In fact, other than saying, oh, we were kids caught up in a war, now we're adults. So you're adults and all of a sudden you're going to take the purity of a children's idea out of it and put cocaine and violence. And there's no. It's just, and that's why if it had been any other property besides something that was so pure for kids, maybe I would have liked it more. And I realized after the fact, you know, I really don't like this fan film because it's absurd. And it's supposed to be kind of self-parody in a way. They kind of admitted that. They were trying to make fun of the idea that everything that's rebooted is dark and gritty and violent. But I don't think it really came across like that because it doesn't if you just watch the film. You only know that because the director and the producer said that's what they were aiming for. And that was my biggest beef with it. It's like, so back to my question is, why would you have watched it more? If you really take out the idea of what Power Rangers is about, it's about teamwork, solving problems, saving the universe, working together. This has none of that. It's a former ranger who gets mad at everybody, and it wasn't actually killing everyone.
Yeah.
It takes away the absolute idea of what Power Rangers was. And I didn't even really watch it that much, but I know that's what it was about. And that's why I realized how much I don't like the film after the fact.
No, I liked it because maybe, like you said, you know, it didn't need the cussing, the cocaine scene, the nudity. It didn't need those. But the action scene, and you could have toned down on the cussing, that would have been fine. It wouldn't have changed it that much. I like the idea because it could have led into a storyline of these Power Rangers are gone. We're opening a new book for a new line of power people to step up to become Power Rangers to fill in that gap. These Power Rangers are dead. There's now a new bad guy, a former Power Ranger, and a new group of Power Rangers take the reins of the Power Rangers and go after him and the robots and the rest of the bad guys in the Power Ranger world.
No, it's not.
World.
It's not the story or plot. It's not that. It's not. That's not. I think you misunderstand the question. Why do we have to like it better because it's dark and gritty? It's not the plot of it. I mean, anyone can
I
could write a fan fiction where
not
I
being
take,
a kid,
you
the,
know.
And looking at the Power Rangers, it's corny and campy.
But it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the martial arts. I appreciate the monsters and the premises of Power Rangers, but just the corniness and the campiness not being a kid just
and that's kind of the funny
drove
thing.
Me crazy because and that's why I couldn't enjoy it growing up. My nephew loved it, and I just sat there with my eyes crossed.
Well, that's the funny thing about this. The original Power Rangers, most of them had martial arts training and stuff for this show. Mm-hmm. This fan film is just choreographed. There's no martial arts in it. It's all no,
let's be honest with you. Let's be honest with you. And today's cinema, you don't have to have a martial arts background. As long as you have the physical capability, everything is choreographed.
But then then you get movies like The Raid where they actually know martial arts.
But you really don't need to know martial arts.
But it's so much better if they do.
For 5 minutes, throw this punch, throw this punch, throw this kick. It's no different than ice skating, ballet, whatever. You just need to pull it off for 5 minute scenes, and you're good to go.
I mean, when it comes to the fan fiction world, I mean, I've watched a lot of fan films, and I've read fan fiction, and I'm all for the idea of doing it. And I think this was a cool experiment in what they tried to do. I just I think if it hadn't been Power Rangers, maybe. And it hadn't been so. I think maybe if you take away some of the cussing, it's not even so much the blood. You know, that's not that big a deal. It's the cussing, the cocaine, the nudity. It's taking that childhood purity away. It's okay to take the Power Rangers and make them for adults and say, hey, it's a violent war. Violence mm-hmm. happens. It's the little things like that. You know, I mean, why not take it in Jack Bauer level? You know, have them say, damn it. They don't need to say the F word left and right.
Exactly.
You know. And you don't need to see the one ranger snorting coke. I mean, that was probably my biggest things with it. It's just you took this childhood idea and you turned it. You almost flipped it around. It's just to me a little too dark and gritty.
It's like look at Avengers. I mean, you take a childhood idea and you put it into the theaters and adults enjoy it as well.
That's
as
what
the children.
A guy at work said the other day. He was like, "What's next? Are we going to take Captain America and Iron Man when they're old and worn up, and we're going to do a fan film of them snorting drugs and tag team and Black Widow or something?" Because they're, you know, it's just like you have to be careful with the genres you play with, you know, or it's like taking Disney characters and turning them into cartoon porn, you know. It's like
exactly,
it's a little creepy, yeah. You know. But it was a cool experiment, and it was all over the internet this week, so it's definitely worth talking about. I mean, we had it on the site. I think I need to put it back up because if you haven't seen it, it is back on YouTube and now on Vimeo. And that was another quick thing that I want to talk about is the idea that, you know, Saban Entertainment wanted it taken down. And the funny thing is it was released for free. It was released for non-profit. And Mark Zuckerberg, of course, who owns Facebook, allowed them to put it on there. And he's worth billions. And I think once Zuckerberg got behind the project, Saban Entertainment's like, you know what? It's not even worth our legal battle. It's not costing us any money, so they allowed Vimeo and YouTube to put it back up. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a win for free speech and for fans in that sense also.
And it does get the whole Power Ranger name back out there. I mean, when the movie comes out,
I don't think the name went anywhere. If you go on Toy Store lately, there's still tons of Power Ranger toys sold.
Well, the original two sets, it involves the first set and the second set of Power Rangers, and it kind of brings it back.
And I think that was the biggest thing that Saban was upset about is because they were working on making a film, and they didn't want this to affect how people thought about their film, thought it was going to be dark and gritty. And then they probably sat back and realized the legal battle is not worth it, too. The kids' audience that they're going for is not watching this thing because it's very adult.
Yeah.
And they realize it's just not worth the effort. Let it be. I mean, there's hundreds of Star Wars fan films out there. Lucas has always been okay with fan films, Star Trek fan films. You know, there's tons. I mean,
yeah, but I don't think any of us would really like a Star Wars film that went to the level of this Power Rangers.
Well, no. And again, that goes back to what I was saying about, you know, you take an idea that should be a certain way and pure, and it's okay to change it and make your own take on it. But sometimes you go a little too far, and that's how I felt with the Power Rangers thing. I enjoyed it for what it was, but I also think that, I'll probably never watch it again, you know.
One and done.
Yeah. You know, I mean, any final thoughts on this Power Rangers fan film?
Nah, I enjoyed it and look forward to the movie coming out. You know, whenever it does finally come out,
I think it's funny they tried to make James Vanderbeek look cool.
They did. They did try with the robot foot.
He's still Varsity Blues.
In Dawson's Creek.
And I'm surprised we're not going to get Matt commenting about, wasn't he like, no, that was a girl in that one that had the whipped cream.
Yes.
You're safe, Matt. No Chris Evans jokes.
No Chris Evans jokes.
Oh, brother.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Action, action, action. Everyone loves a good action movie, and of course, here on the Rebel Radio podcast, the three of us are action movie junkies. Growing up over the years, back to the early 80s action films and some in the 70s that we grew up watching. And throughout 2015 on TrustMeI'mAJedi.com, we're going to have Retroplex Cinema is going to celebrate action films every month. And we have one up already for the month of February, which was John Woo's The Killer. And that's my first choice for an action Retroplex this year, and we're going to do more. So we've kind of been talking about our favorite action films, and we're going to kind of go around and talk about some of the ones that we love the most. And we kind of did sort of a top five, sort of not. So we're going to go around, and I made kind of a long list of a bunch of movies. And what I want to do is kind of do a roundtable discussion where we talk about some of these films and things that we may, and we're going to start with one of the kings of actions, and Matt's going to get all excited because it's his hero, Arnold. Arnold has made some great action films over the years, and
not so great,
and yeah. Some not so great yeah. ones. Probably his most famous is one of the ones that started his career is Commando.
Oh, Commando!
And Commando to this day, it's ridiculous. You know, he goes in, he one man army, he shoots them all at the end of the film.
Let's
and
not
somehow,
forget who the little girl is in the movie.
I don't even remember.
You don't remember?
I remember.
Yes, Charmed.
Charmed? I don't think that was her name.
I know. She was in Charmed.
And you don't remember
Melissa Gilbert?
Melissa Jones. Melissa Jones.
I don't know either. God.
And, continue. So, you know, that was and that was one of the ones that started him. And of course, one of his big ones was his first Terminator film. And we'll talk about the sequel in a minute, which is considered one of the top five action films of all time, probably. And Predator, I think, is one of the early action Predator. Films that I, growing up, because I was young enough to remember, like, being a big one for him. And, we're just going to be kind of quick, because Arnold's done a lot of them. True Lies, of course, mid-90s was a big Arnold film. But I think the Arnold classic, of course, is Terminator 2. It's still considered one of the best sequels of all time, one of the best sci-fi films of all time. And I cringe. I was talking to you guys throughout the week. I kind of cringe at the idea of Terminator 2 being on an action list because I was going for more pure action.
I thought it was Hercules in New York.
But
Hercules in New York.
But Terminator 2 is definitely worthy of being on the top action list. And there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, the shootout at Skynet, or Cyberdyne, I guess Cyberdyne. It was called in the film. And it would have been the future Skynet. The chase towards the end that leads into the factory, and so there's some great reasons for Terminator 2, and I'm going to let Electric Monkey talk for a moment because he's about to jump out of his seat to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger as hero.
Oh man, you gotta love Arnold films. I mean, one-liners everywhere, and I mean, everywhere from Commando, basic plot, you know, they took his daughter, and he has to take out a president of a country so another presidency can take power. Radicalistic group. Just a lot of films. I mean, but you know, some bad ones too. I mean, Red Sonja was in that. Red Sonja whenever he was
Red Sonja.
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 Yeah.
Sonja. Is that the Mexican version?
Yeah.
Red Sonja.
I mean, and I get you know made fun of for liking it a lot, but Last Action Hero, which can arguably
okay. We're done with Arnold now.
Okay.
Last Action Hero sucks so bad.
But yes, Terminator 2 is probably my favorite Arnold film of all time. And, you know, speaking about Skynet, if you didn't know, Google has the same birth date as Skynet in the George Cameron and the Cameron films.
As usual, Electric Monkey, full of useless information. And while we're talking about science fiction, before we get into pure action films, there are some other sci-fi films that make a list, if you're going to do a list of top your favorite action films ever. And I think we stick with James Cameron, Aliens. The second Alien film has got to be up there. Just tremendous action film. You know, it's packed from walls to wall with action. And I think... Not to get too off course, but I'm excited they're making another Alien film. Yes. Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9 and Chappie, which is in theaters this coming weekend, and Elysium, he is doing the Alien movie. And that should be pretty fun. You know, but we'll be talking about more on Alien later on.
Well, we need a refresh from Alien versus Predator and all that.
Yeah, we don't talk about those.
Yeah.
And while we're sticking with sci-fi action films, the most current years, it's hard not to talk about. Well, let's stay in the 80s for a minute before we go to that. RoboCop. The original.
That's Peter Weller.
RoboCop.
The original RoboCop is definitely a top action film ever. And I think it's hard not to talk about that. And there is another sci-fi one, but we're going to talk about it later because it deserves a little more time. But while we're talking about sci-fi, I think the only two modern ones I was thinking of were The Matrix and 300. Because 300 is not really sci-fi, but it's kind of borderline fantasy. The Matrix definitely was a game changer in 1999. You think about since then, in the last 15 years since The Matrix came out, how many films have tried to copy the bullet scenes, the spinning cameras, and it's funny, I watched The Matrix now. I was on TV the other day. It's like, it doesn't hold up as well.
It's the original one.
It's somewhat. You watch it now and you kind of see some things, you know, but that... Those are the, and then of course 300 from a few years ago, things are copying it. You're getting these movies like Pompeii and what was the one with Henry Cavill? Immortals. Where they try to copy that style of that the 300 look for an action film with a heavy overuse of slow motion and the acrobatics and
the spirit. Spirit was the same style because it was the director.
Well, that was more along lines of Sin City, you know, but and those are a couple of sci-fi modern films that I've thought of. And one of the more... I said we're going to hold on for a minute. One of my... It would probably... If I had a top five action films, it's in there. It's The Road Warrior. The Road Warrior should be on anyone's list of top five, except for Matt, because he's stuck on Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And The Road Warrior is... It starts from the beginning to the end of the film. It's nothing but a car chase, basically. And where everyone's getting excited for the new Mad Max film, which looks like it's going to be an action-packed film also. And The Road Warrior is one of my all-time favorite films, and it still holds up well today. It's practical effects. They filmed all that. It's real cars. And it's got Mel Gibson as a badass in it.
And it's a badass car that he has.
Yeah.
The Pontiac.
And it's just a fantastically great action movie. And those are some sci-fi action films that I thought of. Am I missing any?
Some sci-fi film? Man, you know, Road Warrior did pass me up. So, I mean, I had to get called out on that it wasn't on my list because I completely forgot about Road Warrior.
Let's be honest. There's a lot of good ones. We're not going to be able to remember them all.
And another one that is not just one of the greatest action films of all time. It makes list of top 100 films of all time a lot of times is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, Raiders.
I mean, you can't talk action films and not talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, from the beginning scene where he's in the temple with the boulder,
yes,
to the tank and car chases at the end, to the snake thing. I mean, it's just Raiders of the Lost Ark is the prime example of what an action adventure film should be.
And then when the ark is opened, when the ark is open and everyone's just melting around him.
Oh man, that scared the crap out of me as a little kid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. When the face is melting.
Yes, I could watch that scene.
And then the big German guy, where he, you know, the plane spinning around. And
oh, it's a great fight scene.
Oh yes,
yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark is to this day one of my
top. I hate snakes.
I mean. And you know, Frank mentioned, you know, me being a black belt in Taekwondo, you know, whenever I first started sparring, I wanted to do all the fancy kicks. I wanted to do the jump spin kicks, and people referred to me as that guy with the two swords that, you know, was just swinging them around like crazy, and then, you know, someone just does something simple like pull out a gun, and then, pa, you know, just, I would do all this fancy stuff, and then, you know, someone would throw a straight kick and... simple kick that you learn when you're a beginner, a white belt, and just take me out.
And the, you know, we'll switch over a little bit. We talked about some of the classic action films, sci-fi, fantasy. The 90s was a great era for action films. Matt's a little bit younger, but me and Frank remember the 90s. The 90s really did. It took the idea of the 80s and brought it up to a little bit to a new level in the 90s, and it was choke full of action films that were exciting to watch. One of the earliest ones is Point Break, which is, of course, getting remade, God forbid, with a remake later this summer. And Point Break still holds up really well. It put Keanu Reeves in a different spotlight from Bill and Ted.
Yes.
And Patrick Swayze was great as Bodie in the role. And I still love watching Point Break. I still think it's a great action film. And that's one of the ones in the 90s that got kickstarted in the 90s. And, of course, one of my all-time favorite action films in the 90s is Michael Bay's The Rock.
The Rock.
And I know Michael Bay's taken a lot of flack over the last few years for his Transformer films and stuff, but there was a time when Michael Bay looked like he was going to be a fantastic action director. You know, he made The Rock, and it still holds up well today. You have Sean Connery.
The Ferrari scene? Yeah, I mean,
Nicolas Cage when he was at the top of his game before mm-hmm. he started making Left Behind movies he's doing now. And when he didn't owe the IRS money. Mm-hmm. And just the music, the excitement. You have Michael Biehn in it from Aliens. I mean, dude, Michael Biehn's always kick-ass in the action film. And just the shootout in the shower.
The opening scene where they're just, they're at the lowest point they just get fired upon like fish in a barrel.
I mean, the Rock is I love The Rock. It's one of my favorite action movies.
Yeah. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking, Mark?
That's not the same Rock.
Oh.
I didn't like it. Yeah. It didn't have enough explosions.
Can we just hit him now?
No.
And throw him out?
I don't want to hit anybody.
And so we're kind of rambling about some action films here, but you know, I'm going to name a few films, and we're going to go around real quick, and tell me what you think about them. Top Gun.
Oh, Top Gun. You've lost that love and feeling, Mark, but not with this movie.
But that's still a great action movie,
heck
right?
Yeah.
Top Gun, Blu-ray surround sound.
Frank.
Love it.
Dirty Harry.
Great
action movie. Okay. The Bourne films. People underrate them for how good they are for action.
They get better every single time.
Okay.
Growing action.
The French Connection.
Oh, my best car chase scene ever.
Great action film. And then, I think I'm First Blood, Rambo.
Oh, my God. The first Rambo.
I mean, that's still one of the top action films of all time. Quentin Tarantino, who's known for his dialogue films. The first Kill Bill. Not the second one, but the first one.
The very first
great one. Great action film.
The crazy 88 fight scene.
I mean, that's an amazing scene. And then one thing we haven't talked about is Asian cinema. And Asian influence cinema. Enter the Dragon is obviously. I think all three of us when we were texting our list had Enter the Dragon somewhere in the top.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it still holds up well today. It's a fantastic film.
I think that was number three on my list.
You could take 10 Bruce Lee films and put them in action list, but Enter the Dragon is the one that stands out above the rest. Mm-hmm. And for me, I watch a lot of Asian cinema, and I know sometimes we've talked in the thing and we do a retroflix cinema. I seem like I only watch John Woo films, and I don't, but The Killer and Hardboiled are two of his films that still, to this day, are two of the best action films ever made. Mm-hmm. And his best American action film he made probably is Face Off. And I've noticed it makes a lot of lists for top action films because he took his Asian style and he put it into American film, and it's got some great action scenes in it. And John Woo is one that... to me, has influenced a lot of films today. I think we would not get The Raid and The Raid 2 without the direction of John Woo and doing what he did and helping bring Asian cinema into American audiences. And so that leaves me with a few films left. We're going to talk about what some of our top ones were. And because we all made lists and we were talking about what our favorite action films are. And Matt's list, because he sucks, does include Die Hard, which Frank was trying to mention early. So we're going to get to Die Hard in a minute, and we're going to let Matt go first and make fun of his little list he has here.
Hey, you want all of them?
Just read them off. Say, this is your top five action films.
Number five, Bloodsport. I mean...
Yeah. I'll give you that. I think Bloodsport, it doesn't hold up as well as it used to. It held up really well into the 90s, but now I think that it's not holding up as well because we're expecting more.
Yeah.
And I think Van Damme's kind of laughed at now.
He is.
He's,
I mean,
he's kind of become a parody of himself.
He was a dancer that, you know, they could angle the camera at and look like he would throw really good kicks. But the movie, no stuntmen in the entire movie. Everything was done by the actors. It's based off of true events. Some of them are stretched, but actually, I mean, the scene with the coin where they're trying, you know, the people from the town are trying to take that reporter lady that came with Van Damme. Or Frank Dukes upstairs, and he's trying to claim her, and he said, if I can take that coin from your hand, then she's mine. And he takes it from her hand like Mr. Miyagi with the fly, you know, and it really did happen. So some of that stuff is cool just because it is a true event movie. My next one, of course, I'll get a lot of heckle for this, but I put Expendables for number four. the first Expendables. I feel like, you know, we didn't get to see all these action stars together but ever.
Every single other movie we've mentioned in the last 15 minutes is better than that movie.
Probably. Yeah, you know, the plot is kind of weak. But, you know, I think the idea, you know, and the motive for doing the movie, Sylvester Stallone wanted to get all these action stars that hadn't done anything in a while. Jet Li, Jason Statham, Dolph Lundgren, which, you know, Dolph Lundgren, he does all this chemistry work in there. He actually has a chemistry degree, so he actually played himself in that movie. And Stone Cold Steve Austin almost got his leg blown off, so... For that, I give him credit. The guy, you know, made a movie. He almost lost his leg to give us a cool action film. I'll give that man a hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We will just move on and let you have your little expendable moment.
Next, Dolph Lundgren again. Showdown Little Tokyo, but I mainly gave this one for Brandon Lee because it was a semi-buddy cop movie. Brandon Lee actually plays a detective from America that doesn't really know a lot about Japan. You know, culture, and Dolph Lundgren is the opposite. He grew up in Japan, and he looks American, knows a lot about Japan culture. They do martial arts. The bad guy of the drug coalition killed Dolph Lundgren's parents, and so, and then that chick from Wayne's World, you know, shows her breasts. So it's a solid movie to me, and Brandon Lee, he died so early. We got this film, we got Rapid Fire, and we got The Crow, and I think, you know, because of the legacy that the Lees left behind, I give this credit to Brandon Lee.
So how many other plots of the entire film are you going to tell us?
Well, there's ninja stars and ninjas.
What's next for your list?
Enter the Dragon. I mean, we've talked about Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee, he choreographed all the fights in the movie, and you get to see a lot of his philosophy in the movie. It's his last film, and... You know, the film...
Sort of, since they made the one with the found footage and stuff.
Yes. And I feel like it kind of brought the Asian culture to America a little bit more, because at the time we were at war with... we had the Vietnam War and the Korean War, and there was a bad taste in everyone's mouth about Asian movies, and this kind of made it, you know, very sensible and very enjoyable for Americans with those kinds of, you know, with those kinds of issues. And, of course, my first one is Terminator 2. It's awesome. I mean, it's nonstop action. Some scenes are bigger than others, but, you know, he walks into the biker bar, takes down all these bikers. He's, you know, he's the Terminator. He's stone cold, you know?
Decent list. He shows his age and a little bit of Expendables on there. So, Frank, your favorite action films of all time?
I'll keep it a little quicker than Matt.
Sorry.
You know. since you're going to talk about some of the ones that we've already put down on the list, and Matt's already talked one that was on my list, I'll go with my top two, since I don't think they're on either one of y'all's list.
Well, and, just out of curiosity, what were your 5, 4, and 3, though?
I'm trying to remember what my 4 was, but my 5 was definitely, I think, Die Hard, of course. You know, Christmas movie. To me, that's a Christmas action movie. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You got cool characters. I mean, in a way, you don't realize it almost becomes a buddy film.
It kind of is.
You know, between two of the main characters in the movie, it becomes a buddy film. Two guys that don't know each other. And then, you know, you got the arrogant, you know, feds, you know, think they know everything, you know. But that's why I like that one. And then... But my other two was, you know, the Last Dragon, which is, you know, you had this kid that idolizes Bruce Lee, you know, but he's very, very mild, very calm person, very polite and everything, and winds up falling in love with this pop star. You know, she gets kidnapped by this producer. And taken hostage in a sense, and he's backed up by this other badass bad guy, you know, and some really cool fight scenes happen in it, you know. He catches a bullet with his teeth, you know, okay, you catch a bullet with your teeth. And then my other one was Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire.
You know, also another, you know, are, you know, lots of good music in it. You know, it's almost a sense of musical.
That's one reason Frank likes it, so he can break dance to it.
No, it's a really good movie. Kind of has a, I would say, 50s, 60s feel to it. And Biker Gang. You know, takes the singing star, you know, and her ex-boyfriend gets hired by her current boyfriend / manager to go get her. So at the end, you know, you have a big old cool fight scene and everything between the biker gang and the entire town that gets a little tired of being terrorized by the biker gang. Mm-hmm. You know, just overall, I think a really good movie.
And your top two.
Those were my top two.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what's your top two? On my list, because I'm the host with the most, and this is the only list that matters. Sorry, guys. I'm just kidding. I had a really hard time nailing down to five. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. And I had a tie at number five. I had a tie with The Rock, which I already talked about, and The Killer, which I already talked about. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite John Woo films ever about an assassin. And number four, I also had a tie. So I'm doing like top seven. I had Enter the Dragon, of course, and I had another John Woo film, Hardboiled, which is one of my all-time favorite. The hospital scene alone in that film is, you can put it up against any movie ever made, and that hospital scene is just incredible. And at number three, I had The Road Warrior, which we already talked about. And number two is my only modern film on the list. It's very modern, not even a year old, is The Raid 2. I've been completely blown away by The Raid 2 since it came out last year. I think it's one of the best action films ever made. And I encourage more people to see the Raid films if you haven't seen them. And number one, I have Die Hard. Die Hard is, for me, the first action film that I grew up watching. I was old enough to watch a rated R film that showed me something different I hadn't seen before. It still stands up well. The action in it is spectacular. It made me a Bruce Willis fan as much as it made me an action movie fan. I think if it wasn't for Die Hard, I might not like action films as much as I do today.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's still one of the quintessential action films ever made and most influential.
It was.
We're still getting movies made like Olympus Has Fallen and things like that, White House Down, that every single one of those owe it to Die Hard and what they did with that film.
Character development and being more dynamic other than just explosions and simple plots. You know, you had a whole package in an action movie, which was very uncanny at the time.
And so we're going to do on TrustMeJedi.com, we're going to have a list, we're going to kind of try to compile it, hopefully in the next week or two, and of our top 20 to 25 action films of all time. I hope to get that up. I'm not making any promises because I am expecting a little one any day now. Mm-hmm. And but we hope you enjoyed our action film segments here on the Rebel Radio Podcast. And look for those up on the site soon, we hope.
I'll be back!
Hello, everybody. This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men.
And this is Mike Zabcik from the same. And you're listening to
Rebel Radio. And you can find that on TrustMeIMAJedi.com.
You're a Jedi?
Live long and prosper.
So here at the Rebel Radio Podcast, some news came down this week that kind of saddened most of the world. And that was the passing of Leonard Nimoy, of course, who played Spock. And on TrustMeJedi.com, your host Mark and your editor-in-chief of the website wrote a little article about the passing of Nimoy. And, you know, with celebrities, when they pass, usually you're like, you know, you kind of get that feeling like, oh, well, that sucks, you know, it's sad or whatever. But this is the first time, I think, ever, maybe, that a passing of a celebrity kind of hit home. And I know Matt's a little younger than me and Frank, but for me and Frank, we grew up watching Star Trek. And it, as I was growing up, like I say in the article, I wasn't as big of a Star Trek fan as I was Star Wars. But I watched Trek because my dad did. And it wasn't until years later that I got a true appreciation for Star Trek. I watched the films and stuff. And with Leonard Nimoy's passing, this truly felt like, wow, we lost somebody that was in our living rooms and on our movie screens that we grew up watching at our age. Mm-hmm. And and I really sat back for a minute at work and just reflected on it for a moment, almost like someone I personally knew passed. And maybe that sounds a little cheesy, a little mushy, but that's just kind of how I felt with the passing of Leonard Nimoy. And, you know, I'm sure Frank has some thoughts on this because he, too, grew up watching Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, Leonard Nimoy, he was more than just Spock. You know, I mean, that's what most of us got to know him first as, you know, a beloved character that, you know, I mean, let's be honest, there's two characters that make up Star Trek, and he was one half of those characters. I mean, there's many a Star Trek characters out there, but those are he plays one of the two most famous ones.
Oh, yeah.
And then his accomplishments, you know, not just on film, but behind the film, I mean, he's done directing, he did,
you know,
humanitarian work, documentaries. He directed, you know, Star Trek, you know, 3 and 4. You know, 4 happened to be my personal favorite out of all of them, because I think that was just more of an actual story where you got to love characters and stuff.
He recorded cover songs, too.
You know, he was he wrote stuff, you know, and he was just more than just a actor.
Well, yeah.
You know, he was a voice of characters, you know. So we lost more than just Leonard Nimoy, in a sense.
And he was very philosophical. His last post was on February 22nd, and he wrote, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved, except in memory." That was his last tweet.
That's been making the internet a lot. And, and you know, in Star Trek, where he tells Kirk, you know, that you will always and forever be my friend. And that's how it kind of felt, like the world lost a friend with Leonard Nimoy in his passing. And it's very sad to think that we're down to just William Shatner and Nichelle Nichols, you know, and George Takei. They're the only ones left of the original cast crew of the main characters. Mm-hmm. And
Shatner can't even make it to the funeral because he has that commitment to the Red Cross Ball.
I saw that. They're actually burying him today while we're recording. And it's just, this one really hit home. It might be really hard to ever watch The Wrath of Khan again in that scene where he dies, you know, before they bring him back in part 3.
Now we'll watch it. I think we'll just tear up a lot more.
It's you know, like I said, it wasn't until years later I got appreciation for what Star Trek meant to the world, and it's how it reflects on the ever-changing world that we live in. And throughout me growing up, Leonard Nimoy was there with me. Him and Spock was my favorite character, and I don't know why exactly. I just always liked Spock, and I felt like I went on these adventures with him, and Star Trek is one of the reasons I like science fiction, and you know, it was a sad day on Friday when that hit, that we had lost Leonard Nimoy.
You know why I think we like him? Because there was a lot of heart behind a character with no emotion.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
In the end, he was the most human of us all in some ways. And, you know, and now he's boldly going where no man wants to go, but, you know, may he live long and prosper through the films and in our hearts, and, you know, and people will always remember him.
NASA astronaut Terry Vifts tweeted, "The Vulcan live long and prosper," from the space station as tribute. So it was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite the Enterprise, but it's as close as we've got.
You know, I wouldn't even be surprised, you know, like, and actually I think it would be kind of cool when NASA finally does get back up and going, that we should actually name a shuttle or a pod or something after him.
I can see that happening.
I think I do too.
And on TrustMeWithJedi.com this week, we'll have a couple more little tributes for him. Our new segment we've started on Wednesdays, our We Got You cover. We do a comic book cover. Look for a Leonard Nimoy Star Trek cover this week, and our Rebel Radio digital trading cards. There will be a special edition Leonard Nimoy trading card this week on TrustMeWithJedi.com. But I think that that's all we can say. That's the best tribute us three small guys in this world can give to a great man. And Leonard Nimoy, rest in peace. And we will continue to remember you through your films and through the things you did for the world.
I have been, and always shall be, your friend.
So this has been another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about our favorite action films of all time, and whether we thought Power Rangers fan film was appropriate or cool or not or what have you. But go check it out on TrustMeWithJedi.com, and look for more digital trading cards on the website. And please follow us on Facebook and Twitter and other forms of social media, so you make sure you don't miss an episode or an update as to what's going on the site. And just in case Matt decides to talk about Chris Evans' junk, we made it through an episode without him bringing it up for once.
I'll spare you this time, Mark. but like a bean burrito, it shall return.
Probably so. And well, this has been Rebel Radio with
Tom Ace, the Electric Monkey,
Frank T. Biscuit,
and your host Mark. And we have been the
Rebel Radio Podcast.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.